Miss any of the show? You can get Sheeman and Shepherd all the time with Sheeman and Shepherd On Demand. Available on 99.3ESPN.com and iTunes. This is Sheeman and Shepherd.
Those Beastie Boys being back in the 4 o'clock hour here. Sheeman Shepherd minus Craig Mann. He'll be back tomorrow. You got me today solo. Chris is in the house as well. It's not really solo. They play this song for any parents back in the day when this came out in the 80s. Basically says, don't listen to anything they have to say. Just do your own thing and you'll be okay. Didn't go over too well.
No.
Most households. Although that's not what the Beastie Boys say in the song is true. A lot of hypocrisies.
Yeah.
For some.
But that's okay as a parent. Yeah. We can be hypocrites.
Yeah, do as I say, not as I do.
Exactly. Like, I'm running into this problem with my three-year-old.
Oh, what's that?
He thinks he can talk to me the same way that I can talk to him.
Oh.
And I've got to explain to him, no, son.
Give me an example.
No, son.
Give me an example.
He looks at me and he goes, hey, you don't say that to me. Well, hold on. I'm the dad, so I can't say that to you. So I can tell you to get off of the glass table. Because you're going to hurt yourself, and I know this because I've busted through a glass table or two in my day. So I'm trying to help you out here, son. But doesn't want to hear it. Just is what... You know.
Wow.
Yeah.
6 foot 3 inches says we should change Pete's name to Kyrie Hater number one. I don't hate Kyrie Irving.
I like it.
I don't hate Kyrie Irving.
You do
okay?
a little bit.
I don't hate him. I don't.
Well,
like
here's the thing, though.
I don't like what he turned into, especially the last three games against Milwaukee, because he sucked and everything he did turned to caca.
Here's what everybody needs to know is Pete can't go all the way to hating Kyrie Irving yet because there's still the possibility that he re-signs with the Celtics, and he can't put himself out like that. So what you're doing right here, and I applaud you for it, you're just covering your own backside by saying, I think, and then as soon as he signs on the dotted line with, let's say, Brooklyn, then Pete will go all the way to the hate.
No,
sports hate, of course.
It's unfortunate that he wasn't the right fit for the Celtics, because I really thought he was going to be. And then all the leadership crap that he talked about from 2 years ago, you weren't there. You know, they did better without you. That's a fact. They went further and they had better chemistry. And
it was a different Eastern Conference.
Yeah, but look, they started off 10-10 this year, and it just wasn't the right fit. Look, he can go to Brooklyn. Maybe Kevin Durant joins him there. God only knows who else joins him there. Maybe they're an instant team. They're an instant success. More and more, though, it's looking like the New York Knicks are going to be get nothing.
Left out again. From what I was reading a story over the weekend out of New York, people who cover that team basically saying if the Knicks strike out this year, like they did, like how they struck out with LeBron and Wade and Bosch in that summer of, what was it, 08, 09, whenever it was, they're not going to do what they did that summer where they just hand out a big contract because they have the salary cap space. That they're going to be smart about it. If they don't get their guy this year, they'll slow play it. They'll try to get Anthony Davis next offseason. If they can't do that, that's great. I'll be shocked if that's actually how it happens, to see James Dolan actually own a team and go about something in a smart way. Well, we've never seen it.
Except for one thing. You're taking a big risk. Because I think wherever Anthony Davis goes, he's signing an extension. I don't think any team is going to make a type of deal for Anthony Davis without knowing that he's going to sign with them. Don't you? I mean, I just don't believe. Let me take that back. The Lakers are in such disarray. They might do it. They might do it.
Well, you know? Look, if we're sitting here a year ago.
And Mr. Benson wants to trade with them.
I agree with you 1,000% if we're talking June 10th, 2018. Since then, I've seen Paul George re-sign with a team that nobody thought he was going to re-sign with. And now I see the Toronto Raptors one win away by basically pushing the chips in, saying we're going to mortgage our future because we think that this can get us one title, which is enough.
I don't think the Knicks can afford to do that.
But can you see another team going out and doing that? Can you see a team like a Minnesota?
No.
A team that's been constantly underachieving, where they say, you know what, we're gonna sell every young asset we have other than Carl Anthony Towns. We're going to put him together in a front court with Anthony Davis, and we're gonna see if this thing works.
It's a lot of interesting scenarios.
There's got to be – NBA teams have to start thinking like that because of what we've seen with OKC, and especially if Toronto re-signs Kawhi this offseason.
That happens, then, you know.
At that point, NBA GMs –
because people have this thing. I know we keep saying, you know, the league is good. The league is better when the Knicks, the Celtics, the Lakers, Philadelphia, when they're all good, blah, blah, blah. I really don't know if that's the case anymore. I just don't think – I think Golden State has changed a lot of that. You know, who cares where you are? People want to see good basketball and good players. Are you really going to not tune in if somebody's playing in Toronto over Oklahoma City, over Boston or Miami or New York? I think those days are done. I really do. Some of the guys still want the warm, on occasion, they still want to be around the warmer weather sometimes. Maybe they want to be in Phoenix or they want to be in Miami or they want to, because they want to play golf more. But I don't know. They can always get second homes. I think all that stuff is way, way, way overrated right now. I mean, LeBron's different. LeBron, because of his movie career and what he's doing.
But he's the only one that's flat out said where I am is important, not who I'm playing with. LeBron prioritized location over the team.
But if he wasn't involved in Hollywood in his movies, he probably –
That's
he,
what I'm saying, makes, but, we, different, but, he's but we set, talked about right. this 11 months ago. You looked at that roster that the Lakers had constructed around him, and you said, huh?
Yeah.
There's no shooting. You need shooting around LeBron. Yeah. That's how we're gonna prolong his career. Let him basically run the offense through the low post, surround him with four good shooters. If they single him, let him go one-on-one with post moves. And if they bring a double, he's got great vision where he could kick out, find an open shooter for the three-pointer. That's how the Miami Heat constructed the roster. Mm-hmm. And then that's exactly what the Cleveland Cavaliers did. The Lakers, for some reason, put him with Rajon Rondo, Michael Beasley, and who's the...
Except for one thing, with Kuzma and Ingram. But the other thing is, though, and will people make the argument, on December 25th, we beat the Golden State Warriors. Pretty good, if I remember.
Yeah.
And they would have been the fourth seed at the time. Then LeBron goes down, misses, what, 16 games?
Look, I think...
They never really were the same. So I don't know. I mean, do we think if they had stayed healthy, would they have made the playoffs?
I think they would have made the playoffs. Now, I think they would have stayed as a top four seed and had home court advantage in a series? No, I don't, because we talked about it. They had one of the easiest schedules in the league pre-Christmas.
Yeah.
Post-Christmas, I believe they had the most difficult schedule in the league. So I do think that it would have, you know, obviously it would have evened itself out over the course of the year. But yeah, Lance Stevens, too. Thank you, 239.
Yeah.
Bunch of great signings that the Lakers did. But I do think that they would have gotten to the playoffs.
You know, it's just...
You know, were they a better team than the Clippers? Because that was your 8 seed, right? No, who played Denver? The Spurs.
No, the Spurs, yeah.
The Spurs were your 8 seed.
Yeah.
You know, I look at those... much better coach in San Antonio, obviously. But I do still think that the roster with the Lakers, if LeBron had been healthy all year, would have won more games than the Spurs.
Well, talking about here with Anthony Davis and an article that came out on ESPN today about the teams that have the best chance, I think you can't really put the Celtics into discussion yet until we find out about Kyrie Irving. Certainly, we don't know what Mrs. Benson wants to do, if she's serious about Over My Dead Body, about trading with the Lakers again. I'm not sure I buy into that. So now you go to the Knicks and the New York teams, and you wonder what appeal they have.
You know, we've talked about what the Knicks can offer. They've got the number 3 pick in the draft. You basically hand New Orleans the 1-3 this year, so you know you're getting Zion and either Ja Morant or it looks like R.J. Barrett. And you know Barrett and Zion can play together. We just saw it for a season at Duke.
The Knicks, you got Mitchell Robinson, Kevin Knox.
Yeah, Kevin Knox was showed to be a good player this year. Now, he's young.
Yeah.
But if you're building a team with Zion and R.J. Barrett in New Orleans, then you want young pieces around them.
Yeah, and then you talk about R.J. Barrett. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, what is it going to take
get him? This piece was written by Adrian Wojnarowski, right?
Yeah, how high? And then other two other guys were discussing him. But how high are the Pelicans on R.J. Barrett? Because if they feel like Barrett can become a franchise player, then a number three pick, along with both Dallas first rounders, which is possible, unprotected 2021, and top 10 protected 2023. Maybe that has some real appeal.
Well, and remember the Knicks making the move, what they received for Kristaps Porzingis with Dennis Smith Jr., mm-hmm. a pretty highly regarded young point guard in this league. Is that the point guard that you have him sit behind Drew Holiday for a year or two and kind of learn from him? Because Dennis Smith has really good nights in the NBA. He's not as consistent as you would like, but he's a piece that if you're putting this young core together in New Orleans, you want him a part of it.
Yeah. Well, the other wild card team they're looking at, too, is Denver. They're saying they have the right mix of players, Torrey Craig, Gary Harris, Will Barton, Michael Porter Jr., and Paul Millsap. Give the Pelicans the option of retooling instead of rebuilding. Of course, Jokic is untouchable.
So is Jamal Murray.
Jamal Murray.
Yeah, you can't touch those two.
Untouchable. But he says, we have seen a trend in back-to-back seasons of surprise teams taking the risk of acquiring all-star players on expiring deals. As you said, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Both cases, the reward was greater than the risk.
We got a text from Packer Backer, and I brought this up back in January. If you're the Milwaukee Bucks, you got to do something to keep the Greek Freak, right? You can't just let him, and I know he says right now that he wants to stay in Milwaukee and he wants to win on his own. That's all well and good. Let's see if you don't make it to a finals in your first 7 years in the league, how quickly that tune changed. But if you're Milwaukee, you've got a lot of really good young players on that team. You can use those, flip those good young players for Anthony Davis for a season, basically pull a Toronto Raptors where you're going to say, hey, AD, we're going to put you next to the Greek Freak. We're going to put a bunch of pretty good around you. Maybe nothing that's great, but a bunch of pretty good around you. Let's see how far we get for a season. This was a team that was two wins away from getting to the NBA Finals as currently constructed. I think the Bucks are an interesting team. For a team that hasn't been to the NBA Finals since 72, 75?
Maybe 75, 72.
It was when it was Kareem.
Kareem or Bob Lanier? No, Kareem was a Laker. Was he a Laker by then? Was Bob Lanier on that team? Or was it Kareem? Might have been Kareem.
I believe the winning team was Kareem.
Yeah. But this, see, I think what we got to figure in, there's going to be, by all accounts, probably going to take a third team to be involved in this. The question is, which is that third team? And they bring up an interesting question. Can New Orleans flip Ingram, Ball, or Kuzma to another team to get future draft assets, or do they view each player as a core piece for the future? So, and for example, they bring up the Phoenix Suns. Have an interesting combination of Ball and Josh Hart, which is, remember, which is what LeVar wanted Lonzo to go. Right. So a combination of Ball and Josh Hart exchange for the number four pick, which could go to New Orleans. The Pelicans would end up with the number four, number six, Ingram, and perhaps Kuzma. That's a pretty good return for Anthony Davis right there if they get the Suns involved. That's not bad. That's not bad at all. Ball, Hart, in exchange for the number four pick, and the Pelicans would end up with number four, number six, Ingram, and maybe Kuzma.
Well, and this is where you'd love to get inside the head of the newly appointed VP of basketball operations in New Orleans. What is his name? David Griffin.
Oh, Griffin, yeah.
Griffin.
Yeah.
And see, because by everything that I read, this is a three-player draft. It's Zion, it's Ja Morant, it's RJ Barrett. Then there's a pretty significant drop-off between number three and number four. If New Orleans believes that this is a four, five, six-player draft and they think that they can get three of the top six, then you pull the trigger on that move. But it's all about how their board shapes up. Yeah. You know, you're not going to make the move if they think that it's a three-player draft.
The other interesting part of this, other part of the Laker thing is, and they bring up a good point, is you don't want to accommodate the Lakers on a trade timeline. So the Lakers potentially could sign a max player first and then wait 30 days after the number four pick signs his contract to use a salary slot in a trade. So trading Davis first would decrease room and eliminate the Lakers from adding a third max player to join James and Davis. Petty, but true. I mean, something to, that's the sneaking. And that's where, as a GM, you have to understand the salary cap. You have to understand the ins and outs of the NBA. And this, There's a lot to figure out here. But I do think what Anthony Davis does, if and when he does get traded, I think it's more when, I think it's going to be three teams involved, Chris. I don't think it's going to be a straight up. The only team I think that could get away with it is the Celtics, if they are set on doing that, if Kyrie leaves and give up a lot of talent for a team that would be left with maybe Jaylen Brown, but Tatum would be gone, Smart would be gone, others, graphics would be gone. I don't know. Then you have Davis and Hayward and Rozier, and I just don't. I don't know if you're going to be better. I don't know.
I don't think in the long term, but. But again, is it worth it?
He has to. I mean, knowing that he's going to sign a multi-year deal,
and there will be
you can't make that trade.
Right, there will be that conversation that Danny Ainge has with Maverick Carter. It's his agent, right? Or no?
Yeah, I think so. I believe so. But yeah, get the point.
But yeah, any team's going to have that conversation beforehand, where they know going into it, hey, this is a recruitment year, like what Oklahoma City did with Paul George, and they said, we're going to bring him in for a season. We're going to show them what this franchise is about, how we run our business, and we believe that year that he spends with us is going to do enough for him to re-sign with us.
Mm-hmm.
Worked out for them. I'm really – man, if Toronto wins, if you're Kawhi, I don't know how you leave. Especially to go to the Clippers, where – look, it's still going to be a good team. That was a playoff team, a 7 seed.
Yep.
Without him. But I don't know. That city loves him.
I know. He could be a god there, but we've seen that before. I've seen that before. Depending on what happens tonight in the Golden State series, I'm starting to beep, beep, beep and back up on Kevin Durant. I mean, maybe would he stay out of spite going, see, you're not going to win. You can't win without me, even though I have before. But like this team cannot win without me. And if he has that kind of an ego, he's not going to voice it publicly, I don't think, yet. But if they win tonight because of him and they go on to come back and win this series, which only one other team has done in the NBA Finals down 3-1, does that change Golden State's mentality? And hit like, I'm not going anywhere. There's still people that think he's going to stay anyway.
And it also brings up the question, I know Clay wants to stay there.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
But if you're Golden State.
And Draymond Green, too.
You're Golden State, mm-hmm. Can you say, you know what, we can do this without Clay, or we can get some more depth? Because it's never come back to bite Golden State. The lack of depth. When you're paying all those guys the top dollar value at the top of your roster, it's going to show at the bottom.
Yeah.
Well, they've had 2 postseason runs now with a healthy Kevin Durant, a healthy Steph Curry, a healthy Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson, he's played 121 out of 122 possible playoff games.
Yep.
Guy doesn't miss. Draymond Green, he doesn't get hurt. He's missed a few games because he's been suspended for kicking guys in the Nuggets.
Yep.
But
another reason. Yes.
It's finally started
below
to show.
Equator. Yeah.
It started to show this postseason. You've got to have some form of depth. And when you miss on a few draft picks, like it looks like Golden State has done, or even if they've had them at all, at some point, does the GM and Steve Kerr put their heads together and say, you know what, Klay Thompson's a nice luxury, but can we get more for that, 5-year, $191 million slot that he's going to take up?
The irony in all ironies, I the Rockets, I mean, what a fraud. What a bunch of frauds. If I'm Mike D'Antoni, I'd give him the middle finger and walk away. But so after Toronto wins on Friday night, then Saturday, I have it on our station. I'm driving around doing a couple errands. And all of a sudden, breaking news that the Houston Rockets are back into discussions with Mike D'Antoni about an extension. Happened to be right after Toronto beats Golden State, where the Warriors look a little vulnerable. So the Rockets and Mike D'Antoni rekindled discussions about a contract extension. This is after what happened late last week, where they basically gave him the white glove slap on the face and said, no, you get 1 year, $2.5 million, maybe that goes up if you get to the second round of the playoffs. Now, after Golden State loses game 4, they're gone down 3-1. The owner, Tillman Fertitta, and Rockets general manager Daryl Morey, Craig's favorite guy, had agreed to eliminate the buyout language. That was the primary reason D'Antoni and his agent, Warren Legarry, ended the talks on May 30th. But this was so nice. You can only imagine being a fly on the wall there. LeGarrette was not part of the discussions and told ESPN that a deal still needs to be worked out through him. Did Mike speak to those guys down there? Yes, he did. They went to West Virginia to try to smooth over any hard feelings.
That's where Mike D'Antoni lives?
Yes.
West Virginia?
You know who else lives there? Mike Florio. Pro Football Talk.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. LeGarrette was not
Why
part of...
Why does Mike D'Antoni live in West Virginia?
I don't know.
I gotta tell you, that's the most shocking bit of news I've heard today.
Why?
He doesn't... has a guy with the last name D'Antoni ever lived in West Virginia?
Oh, I don't know. So what are you saying? Italian guys can't live in West Virginia?
It doesn't strike me as a
Florio's
place Italian
one.
Guy.
Florio lives in West Virginia.
I guess he loves it. I guess so.
He loves it.
I've been there once.
I haven't, but whatever. To each his own. Sorry, stereotypes again.
It is a stereotype, and I'm sorry for stereotyping, but it just, that surprised me.
So you're saying, I'm sure there's a lot of nice parts of West Virginia.
Really?
What's not, what do you
I mean, Morgantown like, seems like yeah. a lot of fun on a Saturday in the fall. Not going to yeah. lie. Those kids look like they know how yeah. to yeah. party. By the way, great pictures that come out of Rush Week every year West Virginia.
Yeah. But think about the owner of the Rockets, the owner and a GM go to West Virginia to visit D'Antoni, smooth over any hard feelings. So LeGarrette told ESPN, the agent, did Mike speak to those guys on there? Yes, he did. As always, they asked Mike what he thought. Mike said, sounds great, but talk to Warren. Mike's job is coaching and leaves the negotiating to me. Mike is always affable, but with everybody out there, not trying to raise the rancor in this situation. Clearly gone astray. So after the previous talks ended, Fertitta told reporters during a hastily arranged media availability, that's what I said, that the offer to D'Antoni was a one-year extension with a $5 million base salary plus $4 million incentives for advancing to the playoffs. However, the original offer included only $2.5 million. It was so disingenuous. Only $2.5 million guaranteed money.
It goes a long way in West Virginia. Yep. You can buy a county for $2.5 million in West Virginia.
D'Antoni's contract is up after this, the 2009-2020 season. He's 173-73 record in three seasons with the Rockets, 23-16 in the playoffs during that span, losing to the Golden State Warriors the past 2 years.
And just to remind everybody, Pete, you said back on May 30th at 4:30 that D'Antoni will be fired before February of 2020.
Yeah, and I still...
Do you stand by that still?
I stand by it because I don't think I think it's going to take a hell of a lot of massaging here by the Rockets ownership.
Remember, Ty Lue, now an assistant coach on the Rockets staff. Championship pedigree coach.
Who's going to cave first? Because they're going to have to come up with that for if that other offer, $5 million a year. If I'm D'Antoni, I'm like, no, you're paying me. I want 40 and 5 years. That's what I want after what you did to me. Otherwise, I'll just take my $2.5 million and be on my way.
Open up a new restaurant.
Yeah. We'll see. All right, 239-337-3776. 239-337-3776. When we come back, we head out west. Go west, young man. Because Bob Herrig of ESPN is going to join us live from Pebble Beach, where we'll be when we come back, probably around 1:30 in the afternoon. So he'll set the scene for us. He's a great writer for ESPN. See him on TV all the time as well. So Bob Herrig coming up next from ESPN, live from Pebble Beach. Sheeman and Shepherd rolls on this Monday without Craig, but Chris is here on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
One of them thinks cooking is cool. The other thinks white tube socks are. This is Sheeman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
So Sheeman and Shepherd, we are rolling right along here on a Monday. Craig is off today. He'll be back tomorrow. Chris in the house as well. Going to check in with Bob Herrig in just a minute here. He is live at the U.S. Open in Pebble Beach. It looked like an absolute beautiful day out there. The question is, will it be that way on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday? And a lot of interesting questions I want to ask Bob and get a feel. And can Koepka, can anybody beat him? What about Tiger? Can he find himself again after the Masters? Had a pretty good good run a couple of weeks ago, came up a little bit short. Rory McIlroy, after what he did yesterday and this week over the past week at the Canadian Open, you throw him in the mix. He is playing with a ton of confidence right now. He never plays a Canadian Open either, but he won it. So I think there's a lot of interesting questions here, and the weather, and it's just such a beautiful course out there at Pebble Beach. And Tiger Woods, Justin Rose, Jordan Spieth, they're going to tee off at 5:09 p.m. The beauty about the U.S. Open on the West Coast is it's on the West Coast. So you can basically, you don't have to get up early. The first tee time is at 9:45 on the first hole with Sam Saunders, Carlos Ortiz, and Marcus Fraser on 1 and on 10. Amateur Louis Gagné, Sepp Straka, and Julian Etulain there. So that's the best part about being on the West Coast is that you don't have to miss anything. All right, without further ado, let's head back to the phones to check in with our next guest of the day. Bob Herrick from ESPN covers golf, does a great job, and is out at Pebble Beach for the U.S. Open. Bob, thanks for taking a few minutes. How you doing?
I'm very good, thanks.
You had some beautiful pictures today. It's a beautiful day, it seems, out there. Saw your pictures of your tweets about Tiger, and it looks like an absolute picture-perfect day. Will that weather continue for the next week, really? Next 5 days, anyway.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet right now. It's not supposed to stay this warm, but I don't think there's any significant rain in the forecast. So I think it's going to be fine. I think the weather's going to be pleasant, but it's going to be a little chilly once the tournament starts, at least chilly by Florida standards.
Mm-hmm.
But seriously, I don't think it's going to get above 65 after Wednesday. So it's a little different, especially for golfers used to playing in the heat this time of year. But I think it'll make for a really nice, pleasant experience.
I was going to ask you too, and especially those teeing off early in the day, whether it's on 1 or 10, an advantage for those teeing off later in the day when it gets a little bit warmer at least?
Yeah, possibly. The only other thing that comes into play then is you wonder if there's going to be any wind. I think wind is the great equalizer here, if there is any. Obviously being right on the ocean, it's quite possible that we get some. I think that's what they're going to need for scoring to be a challenge. If there's not a lot of wind, I think we could see some good scores, which is, not something you always see at U.S. Opens. Its course is perfect, and I don't think it's not playing overly long, and it's not real hard and fast. Now, it could change. I think with a few more dry days and without any watering of the course, it'll get firmer and faster the longer the week goes on.
Rory McIlroy was so impressive this past week at the Canadian Open, and can he keep that momentum going and become one of the big favorites this weekend, in your opinion?
I think the fact that the win was somewhat easy, I mean, by easy, I mean, he didn't really have to grind it out the last nine holes yesterday, and I think that makes it a little bit easier to come here off a win. Sometimes winning takes a lot out of a guy, and they get so ramped up that they have a hard time getting back up here a couple of days later. But in Rory's case, he just played so nicely, mm-hmm. and he got himself such a big lead that he almost cruised to that win. I mean, you pretty much knew for the last 5, 6, 7 holes he was going to win. He actually flirted with shooting 59 there for a little bit. And I don't think that's a bad thing at all. It had a really nice tournament of hitting the ball. That's got to be good for his confidence. Obviously made a lot of putts. And now we'll see if he can carry it over. Completely different golf course, obviously. Different greens. But I don't think it ever hurts to come in having had some success and not feel like you're searching for things in your game.
I think an interesting group teeing off at 4:47 on 1 on Thursday, not just the amateur Victor Hovland, but Bruce Koepka and Francisco Molinari. I'll tell you what, in my book, they're two of my favorites. Is Koepka approaching this like he does every major? It's not that difficult. I'm just go out and win it. I mean, can he keep that momentum, that type of attitude going on this course this week?
I mean, if he could keep it going at Bethpage last month, mm-hmm. I don't see why he couldn't do it here. It's He's got this seemingly perfect mindset for majors now, and it's impressive. You know, he basically was using last week to get himself ready for this week, and I think his formula is working quite well. Now, saying that, it's hard to win at any time. It's as easy as he's made it look here at times. It's very few players have won back-to-back U.S. Opens. It's been more than a century since somebody's won three in a row. It's a lot to ask. Completely different golf courses. Obviously, your game has to be ready. But he just did it a month ago at a venue that's really hard. And he's got to be feeling really good about himself. I think it's going to be very fascinating to follow, see how he does, and if he's in the mix again. I mean, he just won. Last year he won the U.S. Open. He wasn't really in contention at the British Open. Then he won the PGA. Then he finished second by a shot to Tiger at the Masters. Then he wins the PGA. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an incredible run of major golf right there, and. It'd be fun to see him keep it going.
I think one of your colleagues at ESPN.com, Nick Petrushkowitz, if I'm getting that right, wrote a fascinating column, and the headline is, Pebble Beach, guide, leave the driver at home. Now, how many players this week you think will abide by that logic?
Well, I don't know that they'll leave it at home, but I think they won't. I think they'll leave it in their bag quite a bit. I don't think you need to hit a lot of drivers here. Certainly not the longer guys, Dustin Johnson, Koepka, Rory. If anything, that's the sort of thing that hurts them, is they lose a little bit of their advantage. They're such good drivers of the ball when they're on, and now to not be able to use it as much, it's a little bit of a drawback for them. It's just the way the course is. It's not a typical a very long golf course, certainly compared to last month at Bethpage. It's about 300 yards shorter. So there's going to be a lot of holes where there's irons or fairway woods off of tees. And they're going to have to pick their spots with the driver. Now, there might be some times where they want to get aggressive, try to hit a little farther, take it on a little bit more, bring some of the rough or the narrowed fairways into play. But I think for the most part, you'll see only a handful of times every round a guy using a driver. Certainly the longer hitters.
And that brings me to our next grouping of Jordan Spieth, Justin Rose, Tiger Woods, 5:09 Eastern Time off of one. And Tiger, can he channel what he did at Augusta? And he played very well a couple of weeks ago, obviously, too. Came up a little bit short there, but played, I thought, pretty well. How is he going to handle this week? And as far as... his aggressiveness, do you think?
Well, I think it'll be more strategic for him. Certainly, and that was, I think, the case at Augusta. It was a matter of him sort of thinking his way around the last round and putting the ball in the right positions. I think we saw that clearly at the 13th and 15th holes at Augusta. He did not go flag hunting on those par fives. He just made sure he got himself on the green. Give himself two putts for birdie, wasn't overly aggressive, but yet hit drivers off tees when he could. I think Pebble Beach will be less drivers for him also. There's a premium on keeping it in play. The rough is pretty difficult. We saw when he was out of position at Bethpage, that made for a couple of long 2 days for him there. You got to keep it in the fairway, and his strength is iron play. He's still one of the best in the game with irons. He's leading the tour in greens and regulation. And you're not going to hit that many greens here if you're not in the fairway. So he's better served, making sure that he gets it in play, even if he has a longer shot in. And I think that's what he's spending a lot of time on. He was here yesterday, played 18 holes. Mm-hmm. Was here a couple of weeks ago, played 9 holes this morning, another 9 holes tomorrow. So, he's obviously working on his game plan now, getting that all sorted, as well as, trying to make sure he's in the best possible fitness to play and have a swing in shape, which looks to be pretty good at this point.
I think an interesting part of one of the articles I read this week about Casey Boines at Pebble Beach Golf Links, grew up next door by Carmel by the Sea, raised at Pebble Beach. He's caddied 8,000 rounds, 8,000 loops at Pebble. He's played 250 times. The USGA has even asked for his help, having him walk the course to offer advice to those charged with the setup. Do you know him at all? How well? And he says basically it's the first seven holes. You got to get your scoring done because the next seven are very difficult.
Yeah, that's a pretty good assessment. I don't know him, but that is a, you know, that's sort of the way you have to look at it here. Even though number two is a converted par four, it's normally a par five. It's a par four this week. But really, one and three are fairly benign holes. Five is a par three. Six is a birdie hole, a par five. And seven is a very short par three. It's only 105, 110 yards. Then things start to get tough. Eight, nine, ten along the coast are very stern and long par fours with a lot of rough and obviously the cliff off to the right mm-hmm. that you have to worry about. And then you come back the other way, and even the 14th hole of par five is not easy. So you do. You sort of, you know, you hope that you can make a birdie or two in those first seven holes and then hang on coming back. And then again, if there's wind, weather, that makes things a lot more interesting, a lot more difficult, and that's another factor to contend with, which we don't quite know for sure. Right now, it's calm as can be, and would be probably an easy day for scoring by their standards. But things have a way of changing when the tournament starts.
Speaking with Bob Harrig of ESPN, covers golf, does a great job. He's live at Pebble Beach. A couple more questions, Bob. Have they tweaked the course at all for this U.S. Open this year?
No, not really. I mean, they had made some changes to the course in years past that were, you know, shifting of some fairways. They moved some fairways, the ninth and tenth holes, a little bit closer to the water. But other than that, no, it's pretty much the same as you're used to seeing every winter when they play the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Of course, the conditions, the course setup are completely different. The flags are not in the middle of greens like they are then. The rough is much lower because it's a Pro-Am format. It's softer, wetter, colder usually. The golf course plays a lot different this time of year than it does in February. That's why Phil Mickelson, who won in February, sort of, you know, downplays all of that. He's like, I won't really approach the golf course anywhere near the same I did when I'm playing that tournament. Feels he can be way more aggressive in the wintertime playing here than he can during the U.S. Open. So not too many changes. It's what these guys are used to seeing. It's just all a matter of how firm and fast does it get and how tough is it to navigate that rough.
There's number 18 at Pebble Beach, the greatest finishing hole, not just in this country, but the world, or right up there in the top three or four?
Yeah, you know, it's a good argument, I think. I think some other places might jump in there. They might say they're better. Even Torrey Pines has a pretty unique 18th hole finish, par five also. But I think when you add in, you know, the view, the fact that it is a pretty harrowing tee shot, you still got to get that ball in play. And if you don't, you've got OB to the right. You got a big tree out there in the fairway. It's not only a really good looking hole, but it's one that makes you think and can make you pretty nervous. It's often forgotten, but when Tiger won here in 2000 by 15 shots, he hit his tee shot in the water on 18 at the end of the second round, and didn't know it at the time, but he was down to one golf ball.
Oh, jeez!
And had to play. Ended up making a four on the next ball to make a six on the hole. But, you know, it can get away from you there if you're not careful. So I understand why that hole is thought of so highly.
All right, Bob. Thanks so much. Really appreciate it. Quick pick. Any who do you think is going to win it?
You know, I like Dustin Johnson. Not really going out on a limb. He's finished second in the last two majors. He's won Pebble Beach twice. He had the 54-hole lead here 9 years ago. It blew up that day, shot 82. But he should have won more majors, frankly. He's won one. Put himself in position a bunch of times. I just think he's going to, I think he's going to get it done in one of these ponds. I like him on a golf course where he's had success.
All right, Bob, thank you so much for taking a few minutes, and we'll look forward to reading and watching on TV and reading your stuff. Great job, as always, and all the best. Have fun this week.
Thanks a lot for having me.
All right, thanks a lot. Bob Herrick from ESPN covers golf for ESPN, ESPN.com. Does a great job. Quick break. When we come back, we'll discuss anything that Bob talked about, some about the U.S. Open coming up. We've got all sorts of basketball news to tell you about, Stanley Cup Final. Game 7 is going to be on Wednesday night. A whole lot more. Update you on David Ortiz's situation as well. 239-337-3776. Sheeman and Shepard rolls on.
Why are we getting caller 9?
Oh, that's right. Oh, it's time for Wikipedia.
Look at that.
I totally forgot.
Look at that.
My bad. Time for caller number 9, Wikipedia, up next. Caller number 9 at 239-337-3776. Chance to try to knock me out. Wikipedia, up next. Sheeman and Shepard, 99.3 ESPN.
Think you got what it takes to stump the Shep? Shooter shoot. And here's your shot. It's Wikipedia.
Oh, it's that time again. Wikipedia. Chance to win a great prize. Who's our Carl? Who's our...
All right. Well, hold on.
Oh, sorry.
Let me take over because I'm hosting at this point.
No, you are hosting.
So I'll
you're
channel my, inner Craig Sheeman.
Yes. Today's genre, by the way, is NBA Finals.
NBA Finals, and we have on the line Jake. Jake, how are you?
Jake, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you two?
Good. Where are you from?
From Naples.
All right. Jake in Naples, and we always ask just for bleeps and giggles, because Craig's really nosy, so I'll be nosy Craig and say, how old are you, and what do you do for a living?
I'm 33 years old, and I am a CNC machinist.
Nice. Excellent. All right. You know how this works?
Yeah, I listen every day.
Thank you very much.
All right, fantastic. So first of three, you will have the chance to steal a question if Pete gets it wrong. Mm-hmm. And if you get it wrong, Jake, no worries. Just go to Pete. all right, so question one goes to Jake. Which NBA player has won the Finals MVP a record 6 times?
I would say Michael Jordan.
All right,
very
one
good.
Nothing. I'm going to count just because I'll forget.
Yeah, sure. Very good, Jake.
All right, question two. This goes to Pete.
Yeah, yeah.
Other than Michael Jordan, who is the only player to win Finals MVP 3 consecutive years?
Finals MVP 3 consecutive years. I have an obvious answer at the top of my head. Let me see. 3 consecutive years, Finals MVP. Bill Russell. Yeah.
All right, Jake, do you need me to repeat the question?
No. I will say 3 consecutive years. LeBron James.
No, that would be one Shaquille O'Neal
okay.
When he carried Kobe Bryant to his first three titles.
There we go.
Yep. All right, Jake. Bill Russell has won how many NBA titles?
Bill Russell has won 11.
Very good.
Correct. 2-0. Jake in the lead. Here is Pete's question. Which NBA franchise has the most NBA Finals appearances?
That would be the LA / Minneapolis Lakers, I believe. Hey!
Correct.
All right.
2-1. All right. And Jake, throw the perfect game right here, by the way, too. All right. Which NBA franchise has the most NBA titles?
Most NBA titles, I will say the Boston Celtics.
Winner! Yep. Big winner!
How many? Right now for a bigger one. 17. Should have been 20.
17. Is it 17?
Yeah. The Lakers have 16, I believe.
All right, there you go. Jake,
good job,
big
Jake.
Winner. Great work. Taking down the Shep.
Yep.
And you're good to go. Thanks for playing, Jake.
Yeah, hang on.
Hey, thanks, right. Guys.
Awesome. Thank you. Any remaining questions you have for me?
Yeah,
any
I can run through these for you. Yeah. All right, number six. Who is the only player to win finals MVP on a losing team?
Oh, God. Will Chamberlain.
That would wrong. Oh, hold on. Oh. Let me use my buzzer here. That would be wrong. That would be Mr. Jerry West, the logo.
Oh, Jerry West. That's right. Yeah.
All right, Pete. There have been two players to win titles with three different teams. Just name one of them.
Two players to win titles with three different teams.
Yeah, three different franchises, if you will. Name one.
This is probably easy.
Yeah, they are. Both. Yeah. Both, if you think about it.
But you're not. Shaquille O'Neal.
Wrong. He won with the Lakers. He won with the Heat.
Yeah. What's the question?
There have been two players to win titles with three different teams.
See, Walton did it with Portland and the Celtics. Did he do a third one?
Oh, this isn't right, actually. Because I just came up with another one. I came up with a third player.
So it's wrong.
Yeah, I got Dennis Rodman and John Sally Dennis here, Rodman. But I'm thinking of Big
Rodman
Shot Bob.
San Antonio.
Robert Horry won three, right?
Robert Horry,
I found these online. That was wrong.
Yeah, that's wrong.
And finally, who holds records for most points in an NBA Finals game? And how many points?
An NBA Finals game.
Who holds the record for most points in an NBA Finals game?
Again, I'm going to go with Chamberlain. It's probably wrong. But
wrong. That would be Elgin Baylor, who scored 61.
Nice. We're up against it, so I have notes.
Anyway. It's fine.
Hey, it's 3 hours down, one to go. Good job, Jake from Naples. Good job. When we come back at 239-337-3776, it's the fourth and final hour on a Monday edition of Sheeman and Shepherd without Craig, but Chris in the house. Lots to discuss here on 99.3 ESPN.